Hi, this is Clinton Stark of Stark Silver Creek, and we have with us today on the phone from Vancouver, filmmaker Aaron Houston. Hey, Aaron, thanks for taking out some time and joining us today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, we met at the Cinequest Film Festival here in San Jose earlier this year, so I want to talk about your film, Two Theories, One Stone, and maybe we'll talk about the festival a little bit and what it was like presenting your film there. And who knows, with both our teams, you know, you're in Vancouver and I'm in San Jose, we're both in the second round, so maybe we'll even talk some hockey, right? Why not?
Yep, for sure.
So, Two Theories, One Stone. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your film, and then we'll talk about the festival a little bit.
Sure. The film's about sort of just a slice of life. It's a sort of voyeuristic look at just two people having a conversation in a restaurant. And it's about two guys who are sort of waxing philosophical about human nature, and the idea is that they sort of come up with a kind of couple of ideas of why we do the things that we do, and try and convince each other of it, and then have their theory sort of shot down unintentionally by a third party who doesn't know, isn't privy to their conversation that they've been having, kind of thing. So,
yeah, very, very interesting idea. How did you come up with that idea for the film?
Originally it was, I just was sort of fleshing out these two characters, so I just started writing what a conversation between the two of them would be like, and what they would sort of talk about, and what their tone would be, and that kind of stuff, and then wrote sort of a 12-page little script of the two of them sitting in a coffee shop talking about life, kind of thing. And then I wrote that about, I guess, about a year ago, and then kind of just had it in amongst with all the other things that I've written. And an opportunity came up. There was MTV Canada was doing a contest where you spoof a scene from a Quentin Tarantino film.
Ah, yeah, okay.
And you were supposed to spoof an actual scene from one of his films, but instead of doing that, I just kind of remembered this thing that I had written and decided that it might be kind of interesting to sort of pay more of an homage to him and shoot this thing that I had written, because it was kind of Tarantino-like in the sort of fast-paced dialogue kind of aspect of it. And so there's another version of the film as well where they blow each other's heads off at the end for...
Oh, really?
Extra Tarantino effect. So.
Special director's gore edition, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's funny you mentioned Tarantino, because when Lonnie and I were watching the film, we said, I thought, hey, you know, this reminds me of Pulp Fiction, the scene in the restaurant. And then, you know, before they decide to rob it and hold it up, it kind of had that feeling to it. And the other thing that, and I asked you this in an email, is I think it was one take. Is that correct?
Yeah, the whole thing is one take. So it's, 13 and a half minutes, all one take. And with the actors, I mean, we shot coverage and we shot the coverage first, but I had always wanted to do it in one take, but I never sort of mentioned that to the actors because they didn't get nervous, or, you know, we're just sort of comfortable and in the moment. So when we went to shoot the wide, they said, well, do you want to shoot in chunks or whatever? And I said, well, no, let's just shoot the whole thing and sort of see what happens. And then the version of the film is the second take that we shot. And sort of, again, the idea for me was that I think nowadays film is sort of like, you know, has sort of become all about sort of the slick camera moves or, you know, unique shots and, you know, that kind of stuff, where I just kind of wanted to throw it out there and have it be just about story and performance. Like, I think people would either like the film or not like the film just based on sort of what they're saying and their performance as actors. And to, as an audience, I wanted people to watch it and feel like they were in the restaurant, like they're sitting across the table from them, you know, just sort of spying on their conversation, kind of thing. So just to keep it simple and sort of keep it about the story and these two guys just talking.
Yeah, it's a refreshing take, because with all the CGI and all the special effects, not that there's anything wrong sometimes with that, but it is nice to have a well-told story, you know, kind of a throwback, right? And it reminds me, like, there's another filmmaker we've talked to in the past, Jeffrey Goodman, who made a film, The Last Lullaby. Same idea, although it's a feature film, but focus on storytelling, you know, and just stripping away all the surrounding effects and all the surrounding distractions and sticking to the story.
Yeah, Yeah, I think I agree. Like, I think that if it's used properly, that there's not a problem with that. But I just we made a couple of commercials and some segments for the Tourism Commission up here, and that, you know, whenever we did that kind of stuff, it was like, no, it's going to be faster, and you know, that goes on for too long, and this and that. And it was like, you know, it's like, well, no, you know, it's about, you know, you have to create a character, and you know, people have to sort of engage. It's like, you know, our attention span is so small these days, you know, it's like, let's just relax and, you know, get back to sort of the storytelling. Yeah. So.
These two guys, by the way, the two actors, I think they do a great job. I think I met one of them at Cinequest down here, I believe, right? Did you come down with them?
Yeah,
And
Graham came down with us. Alistair was going to come down too, but at the time the Olympics were on, so
oh, that's
he
right.
was, he was really busy with his work, so he wasn't
Now,
able to come down. But yeah, Graham came down with us.
did you work with these guys before, or is this your first time?
That was my first time working with Alistair. With Graham, I had done another short film with him about 6 or 7 years ago, and then when we went to make this, I called Graham up and asked him if he would be our leader during the auditions. And he ended up auditioning himself, and I just thought he really sort of embodied the character of Francis. And he's a great guy. They're both really good guys, and I think that they did a good job. And that was the other thing for me, was that especially in, you know, a wide shot where you see both of them, because a lot of times what happens is, like, you know, when it's a close up on one actor, the other actor's kind of, you know, doesn't engage so much, where, you know,
Right.
in a shot like this, it forces them to really listen to each other and pay attention to each other, and they can own their performance, you know, rather than have it cut together in an editing room. So,
Yeah, I thought the
yeah.
chemistry was very good too. It worked out really well. So,
Yeah.
well, let's talk about Cinequest, the film festival. Was that your first time showing Two Theories, One Stone at a festival?
Yeah, it
Okay.
was sort of the world premiere. It was the first time in front of an audience at all. Yeah.
Very cool. So what was it like? Tell us about the experience coming down from Vancouver to San Jose. You're going to show your film for the first time, world premiere at a festival. How'd that go for you?
It was really great. Cinequest, like, out of any of the film festivals that I've ever been to, was the best experience that I've had. Like, the people who run the festival are very cool. It's very down to earth. It's very much the indie maverick sort of, you know, filmmaking forum that they say that it is. You know, like, a lot of times film festivals will be kind of pretentious and sort of political, and you know, that kind of stuff. And it just there was a really good vibe. It felt like, you know, it was very supportive, and the other filmmakers were very cool, and there was sort of like a camaraderie. It was a really nice week down there, actually. Yeah.
And so you get your film. I guess the crowd comes in. How are you feeling? I mean, were you a little bit nervous? Were you excited? And then what happened once you showed the film?
Yeah, I was nervous to, you know, sort of see how an audience would react to it, because
Sure.
it's very raw, right? Like, you know, if the audience isn't engaged in the story, there's no, like there's nothing to fall back on. You know what I mean? Like, there is no CGI, there is no, you know, fast cutting or, you know, music or, you know, slick camera shots and that kind of stuff. So it was like, you feel a bit naked kind of thing, right? And you know, and just, you know, just wondering, like, if it's, you know, the whole idea is, you know, along with our marketing or whatever, is that, you know, you can't please everybody, right? So, you know, some people are gonna think you're cool, and some people are gonna think you're a douchebag, right? So I wasn't sure if the audience was gonna think that, you know, as filmmakers, we were douchebags, or if they would enjoy it, or, you know what I mean? So it was really, yeah, a bit nervous to begin with, but yeah, it was a good experience. Everybody seemed to really enjoy it, and yeah, it was fun. It was cool.
Now, it's funny you mentioned douchebag, because that's one of the things that stood out that you guys did. You made this douchebag blend of coffee, and I can't remember how. Oh yeah, that's right. We met at an after party, I think, at Cinequest,
Yeah,
and you
that's right.
handed
One of the
it,
hotels,
yeah, at the hotel, and you handed me this douchebag blend, and I brought it home. It was like this. It's supposed to look like a bag of coffee, I guess, and. Yeah, and I showed it to Lonnie. I said, "Take a look at this," you know, and it really left an impression. I think it was clever marketing, and so it reminded me, because on the back of your film, I've got it right here on the DVD. It says "douchebag blends." So I guess that's part of your marketing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's sort of, yeah, just the idea of their their coffee company or whatever kind of thing. Like it's because they're sitting having coffee for while they're having a conversation kind of thing, right? So it's just like, you know, and again, it's like the idea is that, like, you know, we sort of try to please, well, a lot of us try to please sort of everybody all the time kind of thing, and just realizing that, yeah, there's people out there that will like us, people that we won't, that won't, and the same goes for us, like people that we like and other people won't like those people, and you know, that kind of stuff, right? Like our sort of judgments and
Right. So,
on people.
what's the objective and goal now, Aaron? With Two Theories, One Stone, what do you do with a short film like this? Is it just to get it out there and show it at a festival and get exposure, or is there other things you're trying to achieve here with the film?
Well, for me, I mean, my whole thing with filmmaking is like, I know this will come back to bite me one day, but I don't really care so much about the money or, you know, stuff like that. Like, I just sort of, you know, enjoy telling stories and just sort of putting it out there. So for me, the whole thing is just to get as many people to see it or, you know, share it with as many people as possible kind of thing. So get it out to festivals and, you know, hopefully get some kind of distribution on a short film channel or a website or, you know, that kind of thing. So yeah, I don't know. I don't really think about it in terms of like how it will further my career. I just like enjoying making stuff with the people that I work with and being creative together and just sort of putting it out there and seeing what happens. So
So what's on your docket these days? What's keeping you busy? I know, I guess it's Unpaved Productions, right, is the name of the your business up in Vancouver. So what are you guys working on now?
Well, right now there's a couple things. I have a feature film that I've written that's in development with Telefilm Canada up here. It's sort of a government-funded program to help filmmakers. So yeah, I have a feature with them, and then we're shooting our first feature right now, actually, called Sunflower Hour, and it's a mockumentary about the underbelly of children's puppeteering. So.
Yeah, you know that all imp that underbelly of puppeteering. Yeah, that's cool. Mockumentary. So sorry, what's your are you writing and directing that as well?
I wrote it and I'm directing it. Yeah, and we're in the middle of shooting. We're doing it. We're it's just super low budget. It's just coming out of our own pockets, but we're shooting it over weekends. So we started 3 weeks ago. So we've got 3 weekends finished already, and then we shoot 5 more up until June 5th and 6th. So it's nice because every week it's like a short film marathon almost kind of thing. Like every weekend or every week we prep for the next weekend of shooting and then string it all together as a feature in the end kind of thing. So
And when you
give us a
shoot,
bit more.
sorry, go ahead, Aaron. You
I
still
was just
there?
gonna say it gives us a bit more bang for our buck in terms of production value and crew and stuff like that, because you know a lot of people work during the week, so we just sort of go out and play on the weekend and make this film. So
And when you're shooting, I'm assuming you obviously you're shooting in the Vancouver area.
we're shooting. It's been nice because I've sort of for the characters, because it's a mockumentary, like I really wanted to have the locations be authentic. And it's quite a big cast. Like we have 30, I think 34 casts. We have like 17 locations, so it's pretty. It's a bit ambitious for like a small project, but we have a lot of supportive friends and family and that kind of stuff. So we sort of went to people that sort of lived like the characters live kind of thing, so that when we went in, we didn't have to do so much set decking and production design and all that kind of stuff to make it fit with the film, and then it feels really authentic, right? Because it's a real environment that these people are living in and that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
It sounds like the opposite of Two Theories, One Stone, right? Where you had one shot and just two actors. Now you've got quite a bit more going on here, a lot more challenging.
Well, it's kind of my thing too. Like, I get very the things that I've written are all kind of different. You know, like my interests lie in different genres and different kinds of stories and different characters and that kind of stuff. So I don't have like a, you know, a particular niche or anything. So yeah, this will be quite different from Two Theories, One Stone.
So, how about those Canucks?
Yeah. In the second round, yeah.
So are you a big hockey fan? Are you follow I mean, you're Canadian, you must be, right? Are you following the games?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. They made it into the second round. It was kind of a bit nerve-wracking there for a little while, actually. Like, you know, when LA was up on us, but yeah, they came back, and we've had Samuelson came up big, and you know, if Burrows starts playing better again, then I think we could have
Well, it looks
a
like
real run
the Sedin brothers started hitting the score sheet pretty good too as well.
Yeah, and I think they're playing a lot tougher too. You know, it's interesting, right? Because the team looked good during the regular season, but you never know when it comes to the playoffs, right? Like, it's a different kind of game, right? Like, you're seeing this Montreal and Washington in that series.
It's going seven.
I don't know how you pronounce his name, but Halleck made like 53 saves last night. You know, like against Ovechkin in the powerhouse, you know, Capitals kind of thing. So, you know, like, it just, you never know in the playoffs,
Yeah,
right?
that's you're right. That's a number one seed versus number eight,
Yeah.
and in Montreal, you're right though. The playoffs are a complete a whole new ball game. I mean, the Sharks.
Yeah.
The Sa Hey, I live in San Jose, so I know that all too well. Like, we have a great regular season, and then the Sharks, of course, have been flaming out really early in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So, like, there's been expectation that we go all the way to the Cup. I mean, we've got a
Yeah.
lot of high-priced talent like Thornton, and we got Heatley through the Ottawa trade, you know, and so. It's a good thing they made it through the first round because we were nervous too a bit against Colorado. Colorado was playing well, probably just like LA was giving it to Vancouver a bit, you know.
Yeah, looking scary there for a while for San Jose. It looked like, you know, it was possible that they were going to go out in the first round again. And yeah, it's weird because their teams for the last 4 or 5 years has been really good during the regular season. But yeah, something happened with the playoffs that they sort of falter a little bit. But it seems like this year maybe they'll go further.
Yeah, we've been lucky so far. We're getting secondary scoring, like second and third lines, you know, and so hopefully our first line and our top guys wake up because they're gonna be needed through to make it all the way through. So, anyways, so there's a
Yeah,
chance.
I
So
agree.
Vancouver faces Chicago now, right? Is that right?
Which should be interesting. I mean, they played, I think it was last year that they played Chicago knocked us out last year.
And
We played them.
then the Sharks will face the winner of Phoenix, Detroit. Game seven is today, I believe. Yeah, so we'll face the winner. That would be cool if Vancouver meets the Sharks
San
for the
Jose, yeah, in the
if we can
third
make it through the
round.
next round, right? So maybe
Yeah.
we'll
Well, I think it would be an interesting series because I think that, like, you know, probably, you know, both coaches' jobs would be partially on the line if they don't make it this year. You know, like, you know, I think there's a lot of expectations from both teams, like, especially in Vancouver here. Like, you know, there's an expectation that we kind of go all the way too. Like, you know, fans are ready for it kind of thing. So I think it would be a hard-fought series for sure. And especially, you know, both teams would be, you know, so hungry to get to the cup kind of thing. So.
I'm trying to remember the last time Vancouver. You know, every time I think of Vancouver in the Stanley Cup, I'm always thinking back to Tiger Williams. I believe was it Tiger
Oh yeah,
Williams?
82, yeah.
Was that 1982? Yeah, you don't remember with the towel and all that?
Well, the last time we went to the Cup was 94 when we
Okay.
played against New York.
Oh, was that with
Yeah.
Messier? Was Messier? I'm trying to think. Martin
Messier
Nemec.
was playing for New York.
Oh, he's with New York. Okay.
Yeah, we had Lyndon Lindenberg and Kirk McLean and Cliff Ronning and it was our shot at it. Yeah, and I think we hit the post in game seven, and that was it.
I remember that. I remember watching that. I was in Ottawa at the time, cheering on
Yeah.
Vancouver. Yeah. Well, geez, maybe we'll have to have a hockey podcast going forward at some point, you know? So.
For sure. Yeah, hopefully you guys play. Well, I guess it depends, right? Hopefully Phoenix gets through, because the funny thing about Detroit is, like, they were out of the playoffs there for a while, but they had like eight guys injured and they're all back now. So it's still the Detroit team that was there last year. Like, there's kind of the silent killer, I think, this year. You know, people have sort of forgotten about Detroit, but I think they're back now. You know, like, so if they make it into the next round, I think that'd be a tough series between San Jose and Detroit.
Yeah, Detroit always makes me really nervous. I mean, they've got so
Yeah.
much experience, like you were saying. I'd probably rather go up against Phoenix. Although they could be, the sleeper of the playoffs. I don't know, but I'd rather face Phoenix, which is
Well, it's funny,
interesting.
the whole Phoenix thing after they were, you know, gonna, you know, possibly relocate to Hamilton and all the scandal and everything that went on there, that they had like this turnaround year that they've, you know, become a really good team this year, actually.
Yeah, which is funny because it's isn't this the first year after Wayne Gretzky's no longer coaching them?
Yeah, which was kind of, yeah, I was thinking about that too, maybe not so much with the coaching,
It's interesting because I think most of the fabric of the team is pretty much the same as when he was there. So it's kind of I don't know. But what happened with the relocation? Do you know, did that deal get? I guess that just stopped because I forget his name, Basile, or how do you say his name from Rim, was looking to relocate the team to Hamilton. I guess that didn't happen.
No, they ended up going to court and everything, and he ended up losing the case. I think there's a local group in Phoenix that, like, the NHL ended up buying the team, and then I think there's some kind of deal in place now that where they're going to stay in Phoenix for the next little while anyways. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with attendance and their money problems and stuff now that their team is half decent, right? So
It's funny because in the Bay Area here, we've got all kinds of sports activity because the 49ers, they're looking to move them down to South Bay to Santa Clara.
oh, really?
I don't know if they'd still be, I guess they'd still be called the San Francisco 49ers. I don't know for sure. But and then the Oakland A's baseball team, they're talking about moving that team down to San Jose as well. Because in San Jose right now, our only professional sports team, the major four, I should say, we have a soccer team, is the Sharks. So potentially we could have baseball and football as well here soon.
Oh,
So,
really?
but kind of
That's
odd.
pretty
I can't imagine
exciting.
San Francisco not playing at Candlestick, which is where they're at now. But anyways, all right. Well, that was our little sports NHL segment. So, if people want to get more information, Aaron, on what you're doing, your films, your projects, kind of give it, where can they go? Your website?
Yeah, they can go to the website and they can email us at info@unpavedproductions.com. And then we have Facebook pages for on the website. We'll have all the sort of updates, like we're gonna put up a Facebook page for the future and Twitter and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, you can check out unpavedproductions.com and our stuff is there. So
Yeah, I forgot to ask you, are you guys using social media a lot?
yeah, we're starting to, like, we have just trying to navigate that a bit because there's so much of it and so many different places to go, kind of thing. So, especially for the kind of thing that we're doing, like, it's a really useful tool to sort of get your stuff out there without having to, have your hand out to a distributor saying, please, please help us or please do this for us, kind of thing. Like, we can sort of make our own way, which is exciting for us. But just trying to navigate how it works and the best way to go about it. And you still have to sort of, get a fan base or get people watching or listening, kind of thing, right? So,
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a way to directly connect, right, with the end customer.
Well, it's really cool. Like, I think it's wild because now you have, people on YouTube making stuff, and like, I think you guys have Hulu in the States. Anybody can do anything now. Like, it used to be there was sort of like basically a handful of people that, decided whether you had a career or not. And now you can just go out and do it yourself, and you can sort of create your own path and make your own way. Like, I think it's so cool that we can all share our creativity now, and it's not up to somebody whether we get to see it or not. Like, I think that we can share ideas a lot easier now than we used to. And it's, I think it's a lot less money for people, but, like, for something like me, like I said, I don't really care about the money. It's just about that I think that we need to share our ideas and communicate more. And it's pretty cool.
Excellent. Well, Aaron, I want to thank you for joining us today. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, for sure.
We've been
Thanks for
talking
having me.
to Aaron Houston, director, writer, filmmaker, and big hockey fan too, based out of Vancouver, Unpaved Productions. Thanks for spending time today. I'm Clinton Stark, Stark Silver Creek, twice as fun, but only half as smart. So long, everyone. Thanks.